listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Will Edwards, Event Marketing Manager for Three Square. Their 15th annual Holiday Match campaign is currently underway through the end of the year. This initiative is designed to double your impact in our community throughout the holiday season. Will, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So for those who aren't familiar, what is Three Square?
Three Square is Southern Nevada's only food bank and largest hunger relief organization. We serve Lincoln, Nye, Esmeralda, and Clark counties through a network of 150 community partners. So Three Square gets the food, we give it to our partners, and then our partners distribute it out to our hungry neighbors.
How many meals does Three Square distribute, whether directly or through the other agencies?
That is a great question. So as you know, or may not know, there's more than 341,000 individuals who struggle with hunger here in Southern Nevada. And our basic meal count, we distributed more than 400 million meals last year.
Wow, that's fantastic. So tell us about the annual Holiday Match campaign that's winding up right now.
So the Holiday Match campaign goes from now until December 31st. And normally, when you donate a dollar to Three Square, we're able to provide three wholesome meals. But if you donate a dollar now, it'll be six meals. So your impact can be doubled thanks to some great campaign partners in the community.
It's funny because $1 for three meals, that sounds like a lot of food for $1, but $1 for six meals, that's incredible. How exactly does Three Square pull that off?
Well, we are part of Feeding America, so we have a little more pull when it comes down to our buying power. In terms of the match itself, you know, we have to thank Boyd Gaming Corporation, Nevada Gold Mines, operated by Barrick, and Intermountain Healthcare for all joining us for this Holiday Match Challenge campaign.
Okay, so when someone donates a dollar or $20, the sponsors are matching that. So they're providing the equal amount to Three Square?
It is correct.
Nice. Okay. So then how can people donate to the initiative?
All you have to do is go to threesquare.org. That's threesquare.org. And there will be a little pop-up that says Holiday Match Challenge, and you can donate there.
Okay, awesome. And what if someone wants to help out Three Square in another way? Do you have opportunities for volunteering as well?
Of course. So when you go to the website, there will be a couple of buttons after you see the pop-up. And one of those buttons is Give Help. And you can click onto the volunteer, sign up, and it'll show you all the opportunities that we have.
What kinds of things would a volunteer be able to do?
Well, it depends on the need and it depends on the time of the year. So you might be packing meals for children, after school meals for our Kids Cafe program. You also could be packing meals for seniors with our library meals daily for seniors. You could be sorting produce or packing backpack for kids for weekend meals.
Okay. So once again, threesquare.org is the website. That's spelled out threesquare.org, threesquare.org. You can click on donate and contribute to the Holiday Match campaign. Now, normally when you donate a dollar to Three Square, they can provide up to three meals to hungry residents in the valley. During the Holiday Match campaign, that is doubled. So for every dollar that you donate, they can provide up to six meals for food insecure residents of Southern Nevada. So from now until December 31st, that's when the campaign ends. Now is the time to donate to Three Square because anything that you donate, no matter how much, will be doubled thanks to the match sponsors who are helping out with the Holiday Match campaign. So threesquare.org is the place to go. And we've been speaking today with Will Edwards. He's the event marketing manager for Three Square. And Will, I really appreciate you being here and sharing what Three Square is doing in the community and how community members can help out, not just with making the impact that you normally do, but doubling the impact during the holidays through the Holiday Match campaign. So thank you so much for your time and sharing today.
Thank you, Heather, and thank you for always getting the word out.
After I lost my mom, I lost my way. Then I found youth advocate programs, behavioral health services.
As a little kid, I made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
YAP gives communities alternatives to residential care, youth incarceration, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, nearly 90% of participants remain in their community. YAP works.
I'm working towards a bright future.
Youth advocate programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn more at yapinc.org.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me is Leonard Slatkin, conductor and artistic consultant to the Las Vegas Philharmonic. Leonard, thank you so much for being here today.
Great to be with you, Heather.
So why is a Philharmonic important to the Las Vegas community?
Any orchestra is, in a way, a backbone of a cultural community. Las Vegas is a little different because it thinks of entertainment usually in just one particular format, and that's for a lot of people. And it relies on the entertainment industry to draw people to the city. But underneath that all, there's a basic cultural understanding of what history is. It's not ephemeral in this case, meaning it is there for all time, whether it's an orchestra, a museum, a ballet company, the opera. These are the backbones of what have stood the test of time, as we like to call it. And an orchestra really goes through all the periods of our history in music, especially today's orchestra, which is required to embrace all of the other kinds of musics that are out there. We are no longer just devoted to playing the music by dead white European composers. Now we do everything. We do rap concerts. We do films. We do our usual classics. We do children's concerts. We do other pops concerts. So the need and diversity of what an orchestra can do is unlike any other organization.
So is a Philharmonic a specific type of orchestra, or are they just synonyms?
They are interchangeable. A symphony orchestra designation is called an orchestra because it includes a string section. Anything other than that is usually a band. It can be like a band that marches at football games. It can be a band that plays backup for a rock group. But it's the string section that is the body of it. Philharmonic literally means coming together. And an orchestra fills that role in its definition. But essentially, people use the two words interchangeably. And you even have orchestras that are called Philharmonic Symphony Orchestras, confusing the issue even more.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Now, what's your role as artistic consultant to the Las Vegas Philharmonic?
At the end of last season, the orchestra's 10-year serving music director, Donata Cabrero, stepped down. So now they needed to find somebody else to fill those shoes. Who was going to be the person who guides them into whatever the next chapter would be? It was too late to find someone who wasn't already booked out a couple of years in advance. So they asked me if I would at least come in and advise them in several capacities. One of them was that they have vacancies which need to be filled. And one of those rules in the vacancy is that a music director, the person acting in that capacity, is the person who helps choose the replacements, people who've either retired or have gone on to do other things. So I have to do that. Another thing they needed was to decide who are going to be appropriate candidates for the future music directors. And I could advise them for that. They needed someone who could come and conduct a couple times a year to put a kind of face on it for these few seasons where there is no music director. So I could fill that role. But maybe more important than that to me was that I looked at Las Vegas as being an absolutely incredible opportunity right now. With all of the new businesses that are coming in, all the new construction that's going on, that means an important thing for cultural institutions. And that is that families are going to be settling in Las Vegas, people who are new to the area, people who are in a position to help support the orchestra and its museums and other things that the city provides. Now, that being said, the opportunity also exists to expand the orchestra's reach, and that is to go out and, well, deal with underserved communities, expand its education programs. I'm trying to advise them to really broaden their reach, reaching into the entertainment world that is Las Vegas. Don't shut them out. Don't make them separate. Make them part of what the orchestra's mission is. And I think if we can do something in these 2 years where I'm helping them out, that it provides a really good solid framework for whoever the next music director is. Usually the way this is done is that you hire a music director and that person shapes the identity of the orchestra. In this case, we're reversing it. We're actually creating the paradigm of the orchestra. What's it going to be? What's it going to stand for? Who are they trying to reach? And find a conductor to fit into those set of rules and regulations, shall we say. So in other words, the broad reach of the Las Vegas Symphony will be the defining factor in selecting a new music director.
Wow, that's awesome. How often are the Philharmonic's performances here in Las Vegas?
It varies. They have a season which comprises of between 7 and 8 what we would call classical music presentations. I don't like the term, but it's what we use. Then there are pops presentations, there's special events, and these occur anywhere between every 2 and 3 weeks. It would be nice if the orchestra grows a little bit and we have a slightly more stable yearly situation. I'd like to see them playing about 14 to 15 weeks a year as an immediate goal. And then if it catches on, and if we have a broad-based idea of who they're going to be and what they're going to stand for, then it could grow even further. But now is the time to do this. Now is the time for the growth in the Las Vegas area.
Yeah, absolutely. And where do the performances take place?
The orchestra concerts are mostly done at the Smith Center, which is an outstanding facility. It's really good. They're very lucky to be there. But it also presents a slight challenge because the Smith Center is not owned by the orchestra at all. It's an independent organization. And only when it's available can the orchestra take advantage and use the facility. We can't play there if a show is coming in for a week's run. So that's why the calendar is a little bit unstable. We're at the will of what's available for us. So we've been exploring other opportunities, other places to play when we can't have the Smith Center. And that may help encourage the growth in the terms of the number of performances as we discover. That's what I'm going out and doing, trying to look for alternates, trying to look for different kinds of venues. We could play in a cabaret setting. We can play in a big auditorium. We can play in a high school. There's all kinds of things that the orchestra can do, which just haven't been explored in the past. But again, now is the time to do it.
Well, actually, that brings up a good point. How many musicians are in the orchestra?
About 75. It varies from concert to concert. So, for example, they've just finished playing performances of Messiah. That's a work from the 1700s, and it doesn't require that many players. So we don't use that many for that. On the other hand, when we did American in Paris with me at the beginning of the season, that requires more than 75. So we have to hire people from the outside, hopefully from within the Las Vegas freelance community.
Nice. What are some of the noteworthy performances taking place in 2025?
Well, I think people should really pay attention to the conductors that are coming in, because one of them just might be your next music director. It's not so much what they're playing, but do they get a result from the orchestra? Do you feel a palpable sense of excitement? Do you find it's really something that catches on? See what the musicians look like while they're playing. Obviously, the mainstay will come from the musicians and the board. Everybody has to agree on the person. And it probably will stretch into next season as well. The conductors we're looking at also are all potential music directors. It may go on past that. You want to find the exact right person, somebody who really will invest themselves in the Las Vegas community. That becomes an important part. These days, you're looking for conductors who have very good communication skills. Can they speak to the audiences? Can they go out in the community? Can they be active in fundraising? All these things are part of the heart and soul of what an orchestra is, the involvement of its chief artistic person to really reach across and get as many people interested as possible. Now, that having been said, for the most part, an orchestra doesn't appeal to everyone. If we just made it the so-called classical music canon, you're talking about 5% of the population. It's not much, but it's actually normal throughout the world like that. But the Las Vegas Philharmonic has the chance to expand its vision, expand its audience. I'd love to get that number up to about 8 or 9%. If you get that much of a community that's interested in the orchestra, you're doing really well. So if, say, there's a convention in town, all the shows that the people want to see are booked, have those concierges go, you know, there's something really interesting going on at the Smith Center. Perhaps you'd like to consider going to hear our orchestra. And this is what they're doing. So there's a lot of excitement with what's happening and what's coming to the orchestra. I think people should really get invested in what's happening.
Yeah. And as far as some of the music, I know people look for pieces that are familiar to them. And I see that there's Tchaikovsky, Beethoven, Rachmaninoff. There's a Romeo and Juliet special for Valentine's Day, which looks really cool.
Yep. But the problem there is that familiarity tends to be something that is for a slightly older crowd. And one of the things we're trying to do is to reach a younger audience as well. The older generations might have had really good music education programs, and they're conversant, they're familiar with the names you just mentioned. But you put somebody who's 25 or younger into that group, and, well, they can be clueless.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. And we need to find out what is it would take to get them into the concert hall. And for those kind of things, we're working on plans for slightly more adventurous kind of experience. Because I think the audience is there for that. I really do. Everybody's not going to like the same thing. And they shouldn't. Everybody has their own tastes. So you want to create a diverse kind of program that reaches across and gets as many people involved as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Now, you mentioned the conductors a few times. Which performance are you conducting in 2025?
I come back in April, and for that program, we are doing one of the masterpieces of the 20th century, a symphony by the Russian Dmitri Shostakovich, which is very popular, very famous. But we're also playing a relatively new piece, which is called Last Year. It's a piece for solo cello with strings, harp, and percussion. It's by Mark Adamo, and the work takes its meaning from the very famous piece of Vivaldi called The Four Seasons, something most people are familiar with, they've heard it. But It takes it and gives it a 21st century spin. And that's what I'm talking about when I'm saying reaching new audiences, but also connecting them to the past. So you have the 17th century composer Vivaldi with the 21st century Adamo, and you put them together and you get this rather moving and really exceptionally beautiful and moving piece of music. So that's what I'm looking forward to coming back with the orchestra to do. It's something that's challenging, but at the same time will be invigorating for the members of the orchestra as well as for the audience.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. So where can listeners go for more information about upcoming performances or even get tickets to the Las Vegas Philharmonic?
Well, that's why we have the internet, isn't it? Because you just book in Las Vegas Philharmonic and you get all the information about the programs they're doing and where you can get the tickets. Me, I don't worry too much because actually I sleep with the conductor. Oh, that's me, isn't it?
Okay. So the website for the Las Vegas Philharmonic is lvphil.org. Super simple, super short. lvphil.org. You can find out all about the upcoming performances in the 2025 season all the way through to June.
Yeah, and probably in February, by the way, we'll be announcing the 25-26 season.
Oh, well, there you go. So, and then that will start up in like the fall, right?
In September. That's right.
Okay, awesome. So just a couple months where they don't have performances during the hottest part of the year here.
Right.
But the rest of the year, plenty of performances, and you can find out all the information at lvphil.org. And we've been speaking today with Leonard Slatkin. He's a conductor and the artistic consultant to the Las Vegas Philharmonic. And Leonard, it's been fascinating talking to you and finding out more about the Philharmonic, the Symphony Orchestra, how it contributes to any community, but specifically how it can fit into the Las Vegas community, where, as you mentioned, you know, we think of entertainment in a different way traditionally here. So this is a great addition to give a well-rounded entertainment culture to our city.
And you've hit the right phrase. An orchestra is a combination of education and entertainment. We are there for the audience. We don't do anything without people listening to what we do. and seeing what we do. So we try to combine it in such a way as to make this educational experience entertaining as well.
Yeah, that's the perfect. I love things that can educate and entertain at the same time. Perfect combination.
Yep. Heather, thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, Leonard, thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate it.
Young or old, black or white, or anything in between. From employees to entrepreneurs, doctors to detectives, some things define us and set us apart. But there's one thing that binds us. Before anything, we are one thing. Born to be Americans, proud to be Americans. Our United States are our united fates. Know your Constitution.
Unity. It's an American thing. From AmericanThing.org.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Cassie Slain, tech and consumer products expert who reports on trending products and hot-button issues on morning shows across the nation. 17 million children and teens in this country don't have access to internet at home. T-Mobile's providing free internet for qualifying students through their Project 10 Million program, as well as partnering with the Boys and Girls Clubs of America to help even more kids. Cassie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's so good to be here to talk about this.
So why is access to the internet so important for young students?
Well, you know, I have three kids and I know how important it is personally because it's just there's so much online now. And, you know, every student really needs equal access to reliable internet connectivity, you know, because so much learning and homework is happening there. And I think it's just, it's amazing that in 2024, there's still so many kids that lack that reliable internet access at home.
Yeah, I know here in Clark County, the kids generally use Chromebooks for all their schoolwork and Chromebooks need an internet connection. So why do so many students lack that access to high-speed internet?
Yeah, well, a lot of times it's just, it's cost, you know, it can be cost prohibitive. And like you said, you know, the FCC says 17 million children and teens lack that reliable internet access to high-speed internet. So, you know, they're on there and there's so much now, digital assignments, research, video streaming and lessons. You know, in fact, over the past 5 years, technology in schools has increased 226%. So, you know, before COVID really shined a light on the need for this, and it has become very, very important as more students require that online access to succeed in school.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the Project 10 Million initiative all about?
So Project 10 Million is T-Mobile's $10.7 billion digital equity initiative to really help close that digital divide. So this program offers eligible at-risk students free hotspot, free data plans, and access to at-cost laptops and tablets. And actually, to date, the company has connected over 6 million students through Project 10 Million. So it really has been a game changer for so many students that just need that reliable access in order to keep up with their peers and not fall behind.
Yeah, that's awesome. What determines the eligibility for students?
So there are a lot of factors in order to be eligible. So one of the things you can do is you can go to T-Mobile.com/Project 10 Million to check your eligibility and sign up. And they will have a list on there of some of the ways that you can find out if you're eligible for Project 10 Million.
Okay. And how is T-Mobile partnering with the Boys and Girls Clubs of America?
Yeah, so to continue bridging the digital divide and reach more students, T-Mobile is partnering with the Boys and Girls Club of America. So they're getting the word out even more to help more kids get access to Project 10 Million. So it's a great way for them to just to get that word out.
Okay, so if one of the listeners has a child or a teen who goes to Boys and Girls Clubs of Southern Nevada, which is our local chapter here, what do they need to do to find out more about this? Is it still online or can they ask at the Boys and Girls Club?
Yeah, you know, it's still online. They can ask, of course, but really the best way to find out everything you need to know is to go to tmobile.com/project10million, because there you'll find out everything you need to know about eligibility and all of the things that T-Mobile is doing. They're getting these students free hotspot, free data plans, and those low-cost laptops and tablets.
What kinds of success stories have you heard come out of the Project 10 Million initiative?
You know, I have three kids, and I know for me, seeing how much they do online is so important. So Project 10 Million has connected these kids, and it's been a game changer for many of them. Some of them that used to have to go to the library and have to travel in order to get their homework done. We've heard stories like that. We've heard stories about kids just not being able to complete their homework assignments because they weren't able to get connected. So there are a number of stories of people, you know, parking just outside of public places to connect to their Wi-Fi in order to get homework done. These are some of the things that are happening still because, you know, 17 million kids, really, they lack reliable internet. So there's still kids doing that. But this Project 10 Million has helped, you know, really bridge that gap and get the kids what they need in order to be successful at school.
Yeah, awesome. Is it called Project 10 Million because the goal is reaching 10 million kids?
You got it. That's exactly why it's called Project 10 Million. And they've already reached 6 million kids since 2020 when they launched this project. So, you know, they've done so much in 4 years, but there's more to do. There's more work to do. And Project 10 Million is a really great goal for T-Mobile and to all those kids out there. And we just want to get the word out so that they can understand and know that if they're eligible, that this is something that they can access. It's very important.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So give the website once again where listeners can go to check eligibility or find out more about the Project 10 Million program.
Yes, it's tmobile.com/project10million. And that's 10, the number 10. So yeah, they can go on there, they can learn about eligibility and all of the ways that they can get access.
Okay, fantastic. So once again, that website is tmobile.com/project10million. 10 is a number 10, tmobile.com/project10million. You can find out all about T-Mobile's Project 10 Million with the goal of reaching 10 million kids and helping them get access to the internet if they don't already have it. So there's some eligibility criteria. You can check it all out there. tmobile.com/project10million. And T-Mobile is also partnering with the Boys and Girls Clubs of America. So if you have a kid going to Boys and Girls Clubs of Southern Nevada, then you can check with them to see what the partnership looks like in that club as well. We've got 13 in the Valley. So tmobile.com/project10million. And we've been speaking today with Cassie Slane. She's a tech and consumer products expert who reports on trending products and always has her finger on the pulse of the hot button issues. Cassie, I really appreciate you being here and sharing more about this great program that T-Mobile is doing to help out kids across the nation. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks so much, Heather. It was great to be here.
When students struggle in school because they are hungry,
or fall behind because they lack school supplies or clean clothing,
being greeted at the start of every school day by the smile of a caring adult can make all the difference.
Especially someone from the community.
Someone who knows firsthand the obstacles students might be facing.
And what it will take to help them thrive.
At Communities in Schools, our site coordinators surround students with a community of support and remain by their side
to ensure that they have everything they need to engage in learning
and succeed in school and in life.
Access to technology, learning materials,
and even one-to-one mentor support.
We are there for them all day, every day. This is what Communities in Schools is all about.
Going all in for kids in schools, in communities, and beyond.
To learn more, visit communitiesinschools.org. That's communitiesinschools.org.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Alicia Graham, COO and co-founder of Claimable. Claimable has just launched a free tool to help families file appeals and get the care they need for a brain disorder that causes sudden onset psychiatric symptoms in children. Alicia, thank you so much for being here today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So what exactly is Claimable?
Yeah, Claimable is an AI-powered tool that helps patients fight back when health insurance companies unjustly deny care. So we make it easy for patients to generate and submit personalized appeals in minutes, and it's powered by evidence from millions of clinical, policy, and legal sources that we have in our proprietary database. Today, we support appeals for over 70 life-changing treatments focused on commonly denied medications for things like autoimmune and migraine sufferers. And as you mentioned, we are really excited because we just launched our latest tool for PANS and PANDAS families facing IVIG denials, built in partnership with experts, advocates, and families from that community.
Okay, so yeah, what exactly is PANS and PANDAS?
Yeah, PANS and PANDAS are autoimmune disorders that cause sudden, severe psychiatric and neurological symptoms in children. They're often triggered by infections like strep. In extreme cases, untreated children can lose their ability to speak, to eat, to function normally, spending most of their waking hours in pain in some cases, and forcing them to drop out of school and become completely isolated. It's a pretty devastating disease, not only for the child who's experiencing it, but for the whole family that's involved.
Yeah, sounds like it. Now, how common are PANS and PANDAS?
Estimates are about 1 in 200 children may have it. It is a rare disease, but, you know.
But that is still a number that definitely is worth finding a solution for, absolutely.
Yeah, it's not completely uncommon. And beyond that, I think these are families who haven't had a lot of support, you know, in the past from even the medical community and today from insurers to get them the treatments they need.
Yeah. Do they know what causes it?
One of the causes are strep. In the case of PANDAS and for PANS, there's a lot of other causes of things like even COVID-19, we've heard mono, and other causes related to autoimmune.
Okay. Now, you did mention it in passing, but what is the best treatment for this condition?
So IVIG is a treatment. It stands for intravenous immunoglobulin. It's a life-changing treatment that reduces inflammation and help kids return to normal life. Unfortunately, it is expensive and often denied by insurers, which can leave families stuck until now. But it's commonly prescribed and the leading research organizations recommend it as a treatment in extreme cases.
How exactly does the whole treatment work?
You do typically go into an office and receive an IV, so intravenously through your veins. And so you receive the treatment in some cases once, a few times. It can vary.
Okay. Now, what prompted Claimable to offer families a free tool for PANS and PANDAS specifically?
Yeah, it was prompted by hearing the story of Logan Coulter and the Coulter family on LinkedIn. It was pretty heartbreaking. So their daughter, Gianna, was denied IVIG multiple times, even though she couldn't walk, eat, or talk. And he posted kind of a plea for help. So we heard the call. We didn't previously support this condition, but we stepped up to really help create that appeal and help him get treatment, which was successful. Within 96 hours, the denial was overturned, and Gianna got her treatment, and the family got back some hope. But coming out of that experience, we really wanted to give all the families in the community more support. I mean, I think in the span of a couple days, we spoke to 12 families, so there was just this outpouring of need. And so the story inspired us to launch this tool and make it free for all PANS and PANDAS families.
That's awesome. So what's the process that happens when people file a claim for an appeal through Claimable?
Yeah, so the process is pretty simple. You can come to our website at getclaimable.com. You'll answer some questions about your insurance, about the denial, about your child's experience with the condition. We'll also ask you some questions about your life and how, you know, the whole family has been impacted in terms of your daily life, in terms of finances. We'll also cover the types of treatments that have been tried and failed in the past. And all of that will be put together in a matter of minutes with evidence from clinical research and guidelines, from appeal precedents where similar cases have been overturned, from your own policies, rules, and regulations, your local laws, We pull that together, create an appeal letter, which you can review. And once it's ready to go forward, we submit it for you in minutes because we mail and fax it for you as well.
Nice. Okay. So as you mentioned on getclaimable.com, there are multiple health issues that people could submit claims for. Where can they go to learn more about the free PANS and PANDAS tool specifically?
Yeah, you can go, I mean, same website, getclaimable.com. There is more information if you go to /PANS-PANDAS. But if you go there, anyone, since it's free to use, it automatically is applied at checkout. So you can just go through the experience and you'll say what your condition is and it will be free for you. There's a lot more information about that on our website, though. And you can also follow us on social media where we're sharing more information about this at GetClaimable.
Nice. So once again, the website is getclaimable.com. That's the website for Claimable. If you would like to specifically find out more information about the free PANS and PANDAS tool for that community, getclaimable.com/PANS-PANDAS. getclaimable.com/PANS-PANDAS. And you can also follow them on social media at getclaimable. And we've been speaking today with Alicia Graham. She's the COO and co-founder of Claimable. And Alicia, I really appreciate you being here and sharing more, first of all, about this condition, and secondly, what Claimable is doing to help the families get the coverage that they need for this devastating sounding condition. So thank you so much for sharing today.
Thank you very much for letting me share about this.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Jeff Winton, founder and CEO of the nonprofit Rural Minds, and Nikki Schaefer, director of occupational health and wellness at Pfizer. Mental health problems can escalate during the added stress of the holiday season, so Rural Minds and Pfizer are trying to help out. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Heather.
So, Jeff, what is Rural Minds?
Rural Minds is the only nonprofit organization that exists in America solely focused on advocating for mental health equity for the 46 million people who live in rural America. There are many additional challenges that people in rural America face as it relates to healthcare and specifically mental health care. And so our organization was founded 3 years ago to shine a light on some of these challenges and to help battle the stigma that exists surrounding this illness in rural America.
Why is it harder to get mental health care in rural areas?
Well, there's many reasons, Heather. One of them is that the stigma is still very much alive and well in rural America as it relates to mental illness. People are now finally talking openly about cancer and heart disease and diabetes. But when it comes to depression and bipolar disorder and alcohol use disorder, many people in rural America are ashamed or embarrassed to admit that they have an issue because of the stigma. So unless they admit there's an issue, it's very difficult for them to go and seek help. A couple other factors is that one of the main reasons that we were founded is that mental health access and services are much more limited in rural America. Many times people, especially in states like Nevada, for example, have to drive hours to get to even a primary care physician. And certainly there are many fewer mental health professionals than there are in urban and suburban areas. And another factor is that many people in rural America are either uninsured or underinsured. So they may not have the means to pay for both a diabetes medication, for example, if they have an issue, and for an antidepressant.
Okay. Yeah, those are all very good points. Now, for both rural and urban America, why do mental health challenges escalate during the holiday season in particular?
So a lot of the reason that they escalate is that there are extra pressures or stressors, even some unrealistic expectations that we place on ourselves, and things like financial strain or social isolation. And so with all of those extra stressors, in addition to the ones that are on a daily basis outside the holiday season, it can really be that tipping point, making it very difficult for some folks to manage through the holidays.
How many people in Nevada specifically are affected?
In Nevada, the latest statistics we've seen is that nearly 500,000 people have some type of a mental health condition. And another statistic that I particularly found staggering is that it's estimated that 51% of those people don't seek help because they can't afford to get the assistance that they need. So it's an issue across the country, but it's certainly an issue in Nevada.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So what is the campaign that Rural Minds and Pfizer are currently running?
So really it's about offering up tips for ways that you can seek help, ways that you can cope during the holidays, finding some new coping mechanisms. But really, it's a campaign of awareness and trying to get the word out there that it's okay if you're not feeling yourself. It's okay to ask for help, and it is okay to seek help professionally. And Pfizer and Rural Minds are partnering because we recognize the need for people all around the country and frankly, all around the world. And we need to destigmatize mental health as being anything less than any other medical condition that you would normally seek help for.
Where will people see or hear this awareness raising campaign?
We would encourage people to go to the Rural Minds website, which is ruralminds.org. And you will find not only information on this campaign, but a lot of other helpful information that we have aggregated on our website. We're also very active in social media, so we would encourage people to seek us in social media. Pfizer's also obviously very active in social media. There is a great deal of information out there. But again, as I've said, and as Nikki said just a few moments ago, people have to admit that they need help and need to seek out this information that is readily available.
Nikki, do you have anywhere as well that people can go for more information about mental health, specifically during the holiday season?
We really are recommending the use of the Rural Minds website. Ruralminds.org is the best place because it's the conglomerate of a lot of mental health resources.
All right, fantastic. So once again, that website is ruralminds.org, ruralminds.org. You can find plenty of information about mental health during the holiday season, specifically for residents of rural America, including rural Nevada, which, as we've pointed out, it's hard to get from one place to another. The service providers are often very far away. It's quite spread out. So take a look at ruralminds.org, especially if you're feeling any stress or pressure during the holiday season, ruralminds.org. And we've been speaking today with Jeff Winton. He's the founder and CEO of the nonprofit Rural Minds, and also Nikki Schaefer, Director of Occupational Health and Wellness at Pfizer. And thank you both so much for being here and bringing awareness to this issue, why mental health issues are more of a challenge for those who live in rural areas, and also why it's a bigger challenge during the holiday season. Some fantastic tips and information that you've both shared today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather. Happy holiday.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes and suddenly everything seems darker, less lively, and you lose your motivation to get out of bed.
If you struggle with depression, you're not alone. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, and no matter the time of year, it may affect your behavioral or physical ability to live a happy life.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we understand what you're going through, and we're here to help. Our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round. We work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental wellness.
If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Rodney Harrell, Vice President of Family, Home, and Community for AARP. There's no place like home, and a new AARP study found that almost 3/4 of adults over age 50 want to stay and live in their homes for as long as possible. Rodney, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what's your latest data on older adults' preferences for living at home and in their communities?
Well, we just released a new survey, and it shows some interesting things. About 3/4 of older adults want to stay in their homes and communities as they age. But for many, that goal of aging in place is becoming more challenging. So we found that most adults found that their homes and their communities meet their needs now, but only half were confident that that would be the case as they grow older. And 44% felt that they might need to move in the future. So in short, most people want to stay in their homes and communities as long as possible, but many of us face challenges that are going to really limit that.
What are some of those challenges that would limit a senior's opportunity to stay at home?
Well, if we don't have a home that we can navigate safely, that can be a huge challenge. One of the number one factor, actually, for preventing people from leaving a nursing home is not having a home that is accessible and affordable that they can leave to. So in that worst case scenario, we might not be able to stay in our home simply because it doesn't have what we need. And there are other challenges as well. People might not be able to afford their homes over time and the like. So there's lots of things that we might want to change to make our homes work better for us or to have our housing option that we need as we're aging.
Yeah. What's your personal experience with this?
So, you know, my family itself has dealt with many of these issues. Years ago, when my grandmother was having some trouble, I helped my parents think about, well, how can we change our home to make it better in case she needs somewhere to stay, in case her home becomes a problem with all of the stairs, in case, you know, the medical bills come too high, she can't stay there, maybe she'll have to move in. So we made some changes. We'll put a zero-step entrance in, widen some doorways, some other things that we could do to make it more accessible. Well, then my father had a stroke. And so all of a sudden, he found himself in a situation where he needed some of those same features. But because we had planned ahead and thought about aging needs, even though he wasn't at a point that he needed that, when that emergency happened, he was able to stay in the home. And I think that's something that made us happier, for sure, than having to be in a facility.
Yeah, definitely. So what are some simple improvements that could make a home safer for family members as they grow older?
I think it's really important to start now, but think small. And that's an easy thing to do, and then we can build to bigger things later on. And so things like removing trip hazards that are around the house, loose throw rugs and cords that might make you fall and have a problem later can be easily changed for no cost at all. There are things like lighting, where we can add light bulbs, brighter light bulbs. We can change window treatments or even add windows to A, add more light because older eyes need more light. And B, with the window side of things, that also enable us to see the outside and to be connected with our community. There are things about changing the door handles and closet handles, cabinet handles for hands that are maybe have a hard time gripping things. That's an easy change to make. And we can add grab bars in places where we might need a little support to keep from falling. We can add seating around the house to have in ways that are give us a place to rest if we're trying to access certain features. And technology can play a role as well, that many of us are facing homes that just don't have the features we need. Well, a smart speaker or other device can help us see who's at the door or change the temperature of the home or change the lighting without having to get up and deal with those things. So there's lots of things we can do from small to large that help us stay and thrive in those homes.
Yeah. Now, you did mention the possibility of having trouble navigating the stairs, for example, as someone grows older. What would be a solution for that?
So, you know, no-step entries are one of the biggest things I think that are important in our homes, that the stairs, especially the front, it's wintertime, it's cold at least in a lot of the country. And so you know, we deal with the stairs as being a challenge to get in and out. So we can think about putting a ramp in if that's necessary. You can think about on the entrance of a home, if you've got the wherewithal, you can do what's called a landscape ramp and build in and level the entrance of your home so that you can avoid stairs getting in and out because those are particular trip hazards. Within a home, we can think about the changes we might want to make. Is it possible to use a room that's on the first floor as a bedroom? That's ideal because it prevents you from having to go up and down stairs within the home. If you could think about if you've got the wherewithal, whether or not you want to put in an elevator or a lift into your home. You can think of a chairlift that could go up the stairs too. So there's lots of changes we can make, but what's important to think about is what's the exact home situation I have? What's the budget I have? And then we can start thinking about the solutions that can address those needs.
Yeah, definitely. Now, once we get the home itself more friendly for older people, the community doesn't necessarily follow suit. So we mentioned staying in the community. What improvements can help make the community as a whole safer for older adults?
I think that's right. We need to have, to your point, an all ages approaches to our home, but to our community as well. Every home is within a community. So I think about things like, are there sidewalks in the community? Are those sidewalks well-maintained, level surfaces that don't create their own trip hazards? Are there crosswalks so we can walk the street safely and not be at risk of traffic collisions, or at least be at lower risk? Are there benches around the community so that if we're waiting for a bus or trying to get around our park or some other feature of the community, is there a place for people who might just want to rest a little bit more, have a place to do that? Speaking of the bus, do we have a bus in the first place? Are there transportation options for folks who don't want to drive? Many of us outlive our driving years. And so if the only way to get around is by your personal car, you might not have other options on how to get around and go to the places you want to be and connect with your neighbors the way you'd like. So we really need, again, to have that all ages approach, both to our homes and to our communities.
Yeah. Now, of course, it requires starting that conversation with that loved one. What advice do you have for that?
Yeah, well, first thing I'd say is it's never too early. We should have that conversation now because, as I mentioned in my father's case, we never know when an emergency might happen, a crisis might happen. And if we wait till after the crisis to have these conversations, our options are limited. We're in a hurry, we're facing the stress and the like. So what I encourage people to do is to have the conversation now, but also don't be intimidated by the conversation. We can start small with some of the small changes we've talked about, and we can build from that. The other thing to make it manageable is to think about a room-by-room approach. The AARP Home Fit Guide, for example, talks about every room in the house, and just look at the room, what is exists in the space, and what changes might we want to make there that make that room more accessible for all of us in the family. That's the approach that I think works best of all.
Yeah, great advice. So where can listeners go to learn more about helping senior family members age at home or even see the results of the survey?
Yeah, we've pulled together all of our resources, our Home Fit Guide, our Livability Index, a bunch of helpful things at aarp.org/home and community. So please check that out.
Okay, awesome. So once again, that website is aarp.org/home and community. aarp.org/home and community. Obviously, that's with AARP and plenty of tips and advice there for making a home safer for older adults to age at home and also things to help make that community safer because seniors, as we've heard, 3/4 of them would love to be able to stay in their homes and their communities as they grow older, as long as it's feasible. So here's some ideas to make it feasible and also the results of this survey that we talked about today. We've been speaking with Rodney Harrell. He's the Vice President of Family, Home, and Community for AARP. And Rodney, some great points that you've brought up, some fascinating data, and some wonderful advice to help people and their family members navigate the same thing. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ever lose your keys? Is that normal aging, dementia, or something else? Fear often stops us from asking for a simple checkup from the neck up. Knowing your numbers, blood pressure, blood sugar, and cholesterol are common, but your cognitive numbers are also important, especially if you're age 65 or older. Better to act sooner rather than later if you want to maintain or enhance your brain's health. Hello, I'm Kevin, president of the Dementia Society of America, a national nonprofit organization. I'm excited to offer you a free guide filled with tips for better brain health and important facts about dementia, care planning, and much more. Go to 1-800-DEMENTIA.org or call 1-800-DEMENTIA. Your brain will thank you.
I'm Heather Vale with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Three Square's 15th Annual Holiday Match Campaign is happening through December 31st. This campaign is designed to double your impact in our community throughout the holiday season, as all donations are matched thanks to the generosity of Nevada Gold Mines operated by Barrick, Boyd Gaming Corporation, and Intermountain Healthcare. So now every dollar donated can provide up to 6 meals for hungry residents in Southern Nevada. Donate, volunteer, or find out more at 3square.org. That's 3square.org. The City of Henderson is calling on talented artists to create unique murals at 5 public locations throughout the community, including parks and the Water Street District. You can attend an online informational session on January 7th at 6 p.m., and applications are open through January 13th. Apply or get more information at cityofhenderson.com. That's cityofhenderson.com. And the Shade Tree is holding its Hope for the New Year fundraising campaign through the end of January. Donations will support the shelter's comprehensive programming and operations while expanding its outreach. Any amount helps, and you can donate at theshadetree.org. That's theshadetree.org.